Chapter 10. Money, as I hoped she would. Had I not had the pin, had I even taken it to any other person but Mr. Polonius, Lady Drum would never have noticed me. Had Lady Drum never noticed me, Mr. Bro never would, and I never should have been third clerk of the West Diddlesex. I took heart at all this, and rode off on the very evening of my appointment to my dearest Mary Smith, giving her warning that a certain event, for which one of us was longing very earnestly, might come off sooner than we had expected. And why not? Miss S.'s own fortune was 70L a year, mine was 150L, and when we had 300L, we always vowed we would marry. H. Thought I, if I could but go to Somersetshire now, I might boldly walk up to old Smith's door. He was her grandfather, and a half-pay lieutenant of the Navy. I might knock at the knocker, and see my beloved Mary in the parlor, and not be obliged to sneak behind Eric's on the lookout for her, or pelt stones at midnight at her window. My aunt, in a few days, wrote a pretty gracious reply to my letter. As he had not determined, she said, as to the manner in which he should employ her £3,000, but should take my offer into consideration, begging me to keep my shares open for a little while, until her mind was made up. What, then, does Mr. Bro do? I learned afterwards, in the year 1830, when he and the West Diddlesex Association had disappeared altogether, how he had proceeded. Who are the attorneys at Slopperton? Says he to me in a careless way. Mr. Ruck, sir, says I, is the Tory solicitor, and Messrs. Hodge and Smithers the Liberals. I knew them very well, for the fact is, before Mary Smith came to live in our parts, I was rather partial to Miss Hodge, and her great gold-colored ringlets. But Mary came, and soon put her nose out of joint, as the saying is. And you are of what politics? Why, sir, we are Liberals. I was rather ashamed of this, for Mr. Bro was an out-and-out Tory, but Hodge and Smithers is a most respectable firm. I brought up a packet from them to Hickson, Dixon, Paxton, and Jackson, our solicitors, who are their London correspondents. Mr. Bro only said, "Oh, indeed," and did not talk any further on the subject, but began admiring my diamond pin very much. "Titmarsh, my dear boy," says he, "I have a young lady at Fulham who is worth seeing, I assure you, and who has heard so much about you from her father, for I like you, my boy, I don't care to own it, that she is rather anxious to see you too. Suppose you come down to us for a week? Abednego will do your work." "La, sir, you are very kind," says I. "Well, you shall come down, and I hope you will like my claret. But harkee, I don't think, my dear fellow, you are quite smart enough, quite well enough dressed. Do you understand me? I've my blue coat and brass buttons at home, sir." "What? That thing with the waist between your shoulders, that you wore at Mrs. Bro's party?"
"It was rather high-waisted, being made in the country 2 years before."
"Oh no, that will never do. Get some new clothes, sir, two new suits of clothes." "Sir," says I, "I'm already, if the truth must be told, very short of money for this quarter, and can't afford myself a new suit for a long time to come." "Pooh, pooh. Don't let that annoy you. Here's a £10 note, but no, on second thoughts, you may as well go to my tailor's. I'll drive you down there. And never mind the bill, my good lad." And drive me down he actually did, in his grand coach and four, to Mr. Von Stilts, in Clifford Street, who took my measure, and sent me home two of the finest coats ever seen, a dress coat and a frock, a velvet waistcoat, a silk ditto, and three pairs of pantaloons, of the most beautiful make. Bro told me to get some boots and pumps, and silk stockings for evenings, so that when the time came for me to go down to Fulham, I appeared as handsome as any young nobleman, and Gus said that looked, by jingo, like a regular tip-top swell. In the meantime the following letter had been sent down to Hodge and Smithers. Ramalli, Cornhill, London. July 1822.
Dear sirs, asterisk, 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 this part being on private affairs relative to the cases of Dixon v. Agerstony, Snodgrass v. Rubajand and other, I am not permitted to extract.
Asterisk, 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 likewise we beg to hand you a few more prospectuses of the independent West Didlisex Fire and Life Insurance Company, of which we have the honor to be the solicitors in London. We wrote to you last year, requesting you to accept the Slopperton and Somerset agency for the same, and have been expecting for some time back that either shares or assurances should be affected by you. The capital of the company, as you know, is 5 million sterling,
say 5 million L,
comma, and we are in a situation to offer more than the usual commission to our agents of the legal profession. We shall be happy to give a premium of 6% for shares to the amount of 1,000 L, 6.5%, above 1,000, to be paid immediately upon the taking of the shares. I am, dear sirs, for self and partners, yours most faithfully, Samuel Jackson. This letter, as I have said, came into my hand some time afterwards. I knew nothing of it in the year 1822 when, in my new suit of clothes, I went down to pass a week at the Rookery, Fulham, residence of John Brough Esquire, M.P.P. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.